The program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, it is that time of the week. It is the greatest Tuesday you've had all week, and it is time for the True Wealth Radio Show. I am David Littlejohn. Joining me in studio today,
Matt Dixon.
And we have got, oh man, is it the mostest boringest show possible?
No, we never have a boring show.
No, never.
No, they're riveting.
Okay, we get ready for the most riveting show. Now, you know what? It's one of these where I feel like we kind of, I don't know if I'm sweeping it under the rug or what, but it's, I feel like we need to talk about this because it just gets missed a lot. It's kind of financial plan-y and a little less like, oh, the markets are fun and sexy to talk about.
Which, not lately.
No, they're not lately. And that's probably going to be, I might actually be hiding from that show a little bit.
As goes NVIDIA, as goes the market.
Yeah, I mean, boy, that's sure part of it. Oh, heck, we could talk about it for a second. It seems like it's as goes the Magnificent Seven, so goes the market. But NVIDIA is definitely the one that raises an eyebrow right now.
Mm-hmm. Tesla sure had a rough ride lately.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
I mean, how much do you think that's because it's Tesla versus it is,
how much is it
the
Elon
controversy
versus
of
the
Musk?
News.
Yeah. It's hard to handicap that one. My sense is that there's a lot of just general blowback because, you know, oh, well, this guy's in everything. And so, but I don't know. I mean, profits are profits.
It'd be really interesting to know how much of Tesla's stock performance is based on perception of the CEO.
Yeah. I don't know how you really measure that. I think there's a ton of options activity in Tesla. This is a snoop around the other day. I found there are some exchange-traded funds that are built specifically around the optioning of Tesla and the optioning of NVIDIA.
Really? And just those
like,
two?
Whoa. I mean, not two together.
Separate.
By themselves, like two separate ETFs just for the stock.
Hmm.
And it was really interesting. It's like a synthesized hedge kind of thing.
I wonder why they picked those two. Is it just trading volume? Like how many shares are exchanged back and forth a day? So it allows it to be a...
As far as I know, those two are like in the top five of most optioned stocks in the world.
I mean, maybe it makes sense, right? Like, wouldn't you want to sell options on something that consistently over the last 5 years has kind of just rocketed higher? Like, you're not...
Yeah, because it's like a covered call structure, I think,
right,
was one of them. And it's interesting because the return, and I'm not sure that this is really a good way to play this, by the way, because I think their returns was like over a 12-month period, it was like 83%.
Well, yeah, if you're making money selling the option and you're getting the appreciation of the underlying asset, like...
Well, but here's the weird part. The asset didn't appreciate. It was all paid out in income. And then I'm like, well, I mean, 83% is still really good. And so, like, if you could get 83%, but it's taxed as ordinary income, it's not as good as if you could get 83% and it was taxed as a capital gain, as a long-term gain, right? But, you know, at some point you're like, yeah, but bro, 83% in a year? Seriously?
It's hard to scoff at those type of numbers.
I mean, it's crazy high, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wondered about, like, man, it exists. And you look at how the market is being wagged by those. I mean, if you got positions that are getting optioned like that, how much sway do these things have? And I don't think Tesla's, maybe it is. Is Tesla in the Magnificent Seven?
It was at one point, and I think it kind of disappeared for a second. Right?
I mean, it's,
I don't even know if it's actually just the seven. Is it?
Well, I think big tech, which is more than just the seven, right? I mean, like probably the top 30
stocks. I mean,
at
one point it was Microsoft, it was Apple, it was Google, it was Amazon, NVIDIA, and then there's one more spot.
you know, is it Tesla? How to find this answer. It's probably Tesla.
I thought it was Netflix.
Netflix has definitely been in there. Let's see. We're going to ask ChatGPT, hey, what stocks? Somebody's like, shouldn't you just know this? Are in the Magnificent Seven?
No, we got six. We're just curious on the seventh.
And it says Apple, Microsoft, NVIDIA, Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Tesla. Facebook. So you're right. It was Tesla.
Yeah.
Look at that. So the interesting thing about these, I mean, if we were to sort of just play the theory game, why does big tech seem to be so volatile all of a sudden? I can think of like three or four reasons off the top of my head.
Like, yeah. You go ahead. I've kind of got mine, but yeah, mine are probably different than yours.
It's okay, right? One of the first ones, let's not even look at anything other than how much they've grown in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so this concept of mean reversion, okay? This is not a there's nothing compelling about this other than mathematically things tend to revert to the mean, meaning if like, hey, if the average return is 12% and you're up 30%, you're above average. You're probably going to start drifting back down toward the long-term average again.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a little bit. Now, that's always funny because it's the same as like the hunch thing, right? Like, hey, let's put this other batter up in the lineup. Why? It's like, they're just due. Like, they're due? Like, how does that work, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people think that way, right? So there's a certain amount of like self-fulfilling prophecy to mean reversion.
Right.
I think through a sort of a multiple connections thing, I think that the threat of tariffs is playing a fairly material role here.
Hmm.
And my connection is tariffs are inflationary. Inflation has to be fought by the Fed with higher rates. Higher rates means higher cost of capital. Higher cost of capital hurts growth companies. Growth companies like the Magnificent Seven, which don't really pay significant dividends. They mostly reinvest back into their own stock.
I think there's just a really simple way to kind of view why they could run out of steam, right? And it's as simple as this. As people continue to line up and buy and buy and buy and buy, what happens to that stock? Like the price goes up, right?
Yeah.
And as it goes up, the market capitalization, the value of the company also goes up.
Right.
And companies tend to not grow earnings like at a rate that outpaces the price that people are willing to pay for something.
Yeah, so making valuation argument.
Yeah, right? And so you look at it and you look at what is the value of the company. Well, at a certain point, everyone that was greedy and wanted in on this thing, they look at it and the numbers start to not number, right?
Mm-hmm.
And big hedge funds and all these big companies that kind of can control the price of things, they start to get more and more anxious the higher and the higher that it goes. And you talked about mean reversion. Why mean reversion? Because I think at a certain point, you just can't justify the price that you have to pay for something. And it is largely due to the fact that spending also dries up, right? Like a new product comes out, a new service comes out, AI. Everyone that has their free cash is piling in and they're spending and they're spending and they're spending. But you can't just spend to eternity. Eventually, you spend the money that you had to invest. And then if you're not spending anymore, what happens?
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too. I mean, I like the talking about simple explanations, this idea with NVIDIA in particular, right? So you look at the P.E. ratio of NVIDIA, for those listeners, right, the price-to-earnings ratio. So how much is the price of stock versus how much is a dollar of earnings? Okay, or how much earnings per share?
Wasn't it like 55 or 58 to 1?
It's something really high. And then you look at a company like Apple, which is like in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, so, huh. You're talking about two megatech companies that, but one of them, you have to pay more than double. I believe currently you pay more than double to get the same amount of earnings per share. And so the only reason you would do that is if you thought, well, this other company is going to grow by more than twice as fast as Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at that and I think, is that realistic to have that continued type of growth rate?
While we're talking about Apple, I just want to, this is completely getting down into the weeds of things.
No, we never do that on this show.
No. So really super interesting stuff. I have been seeing the ads for the Ray-Bans that have Meta Vision built into them.
Yeah.
And the price point is in the $300 range. And
it's tempting.
The glasses themselves, you don't have to have a prescription, but mm-hmm. they have a camera lens that can take a photo. It can record video. And it's smart. You can just be looking at something and you can ask the glasses, hey, what is that? And it tells you because it has built-in speakers. And it can. I think they can even answer a call now or something and play music.
And,
I was looking at all this and I'm like, well, because I've heard the argument before. Well, Apple can never go down, right? It's just going to go up and up and up to infinity. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, wait a minute. These glasses now largely can do what a phone can do. Not all of it, not by any means, but like the utility of the phone just took a huge blow from what these glasses can do, right? Like if you can answer a call or you can play your music, the cell phone's like practical purpose really took a pretty big ding. Well, and so it's like you got to think like the world is changing pretty rapidly and what was hot today might not be hot 3 years from now in the same way that it was today.
Right. What I think is really interesting is the idea of the heads-up display. And it's just interesting about when the adoption, if the adoption happens or when, mm-hmm. right? If you think about this, so these are not a new concept. This is like the third generation of glasses that Facebook and Ray-Ban have partnered on. Mm-hmm. And so and what they have integrated into them is the Alexa smart device,
right?
So that Alexa smart device can, you know, you can speak to it and it's got an integrated camera and then it's got speakers in the arms of the glasses. So you're essentially wearing around, you're kind of wearing your camera and your earbuds.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure that the Apple execs are kind of like, well, look, we got earbuds mm-hmm. that work better than these glasses do.
Right.
And right now they do, right? Yep. And you're carrying a way nicer phone in your pocket than your glasses have.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, there was a smart ring at one point. Like, and you could tap the ring and you know, you could do stuff like that with it, too. So they're trying these different peripherals on. But what people may not remember is Google tried this maybe 10 years ago mm-hmm. with something called Google Glass.
Right.
And they were trying to do a heads-up display. And it just kind of flopped.
It didn't
get market adoption. Apple with their
Vision Pro, they already discontinued it and it never even
which I remember demoing and it's incredible.
Yeah, but
it was mind-blowing, but it was really heavy
and $3,000.
It's super heavy and it was heavy on your wallet too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was amazing in some regards, but yeah, it didn't make the sense. And you know, and Facebook's still playing this game, you know, Meta. Right. Mm-hmm. They changed their name. They're working on virtual reality stuff. They've got different games and stuff with their Oculus goggles and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, like, what's the thing that captures the market's attention?
Well, yeah. And younger generations, right, are becoming more and more antisocial. So, like, the social part of the phone, as that kind of like continues to dissipate. I'm not saying the phone's going away. Right. But, you know, you look at a company like Apple. And it's like, maybe they're not part of the big seven years from now. Like, it's possible, right?
It's very possible. Nothing is really permanent anymore. All of these companies have risen and fallen in, you know, arguably like a lifetime,
mm-hmm.
right? And the prior generation, the powerhouses of the day were the Sears and the JCPenney's and the Montgomery Wards, right? It was the stalwart retailers. Where and they all got sort of taken out by Amazon.
Yeah, and I think that's why, you know, you got to be pretty vigilant when you're thinking about your investments.
Yeah,
it's an ever-changing landscape, and I think it will change quicker and quicker and more aggressively more that things change in our world.
I think it's getting harder to buy the stocks with an information advantage and find like a growing small company that's going to become the next big company.
Yeah, because it happens so quickly anymore.
Well, and they get bought. You know, that's the biggie. It's like they just get gobbled up. So these small companies never get a chance because the big companies try to protect themselves they have bigger pockets, right? So mm-hmm. they just buy them. Anyway, there you go. Like none of this was originally on the show as we were thinking about. I'm looking at the clock.
Tie it in.
Yeah.
The markets are changing. How does that tie into our original
Well, we're going to talk about, I want to change perception on investing a little bit in retirement plans. We're going to talk a little bit about, hey, you know, they change limits, what you can put in and how much. But we need to talk about the strategy behind retirement plans. Just how much should you be saving? Is there an order that's more beneficial to you? Like, which retirement plan should you choose first or last? And is there a point at which you shouldn't even maybe consider putting more into retirement plans? These are all relevant questions. We're going to unpack them, but we're going to grab this break first. So stick around, and we'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
They make it pretty simple. They do, right? Hey, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. And this is the next segment. Dave Littlejohn in studio today with me is
Matt Dixon.
And a reminder, you can grab the podcast. We're about to roll up our sleeves and talk about stuff that I find kind of nerd interesting because it's sort of strategy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This is not investment advice about, hey, go buy these investments or whatever. But, you know, people say all the time, you should invest in retirement. And great. I mean, I agree. OK, but how, where, how much? Is there a proper sequence to this? And the answer is it's not a cookie cutter answer. But I think there's some good rules of thumb if we can understand what we're looking at here. And so in 2025, we saw some increases in limits to retirement plans, which is significant because it means you can put more away into a retirement plan.
Yeah.
Right? There are probably two major types of plans out there, types of retirement plans, and then there's two different subcategories in there.
Okay.
Right? I would say there's first you have the really big basket, defined contribution or defined benefit. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're wondering what that means, a defined contribution is the rules state how much you're allowed to put into something. Defined contribution plans are things like 401k plans or a 403b, or maybe you have a TSP, right? Tax savings plan with the federal government. Anything that you get to do pre-tax, but they say you can only put so much money in, right? Maybe you're, and you know, oh, well, but if you're 50, you get a catch up. Okay, yes, but you still are only allowed so many dollars to go into it, okay? That's a defined contribution. What defines it? Well, IRS rules.
Right.
Right? There's a different plan out there called a defined benefit plan, right? Mm. You know what the other name for a defined benefit plan is?
What's that? I feel like this is a joke because you were kind of smirking.
Yeah. Pension.
Yeah.
Right? It's because the plan is not defined by how much money gets contributed to it. It's defined by how much it will pay you as a benefit in retirement. So if you think about one of the most famous in Oregon is PERS, right? And there's like tier one, tier two, tier three.
When do you think, and this is a really open-ended question, so answer it however you want or take it a completely different direction, but like, say, you know, you're talking to maybe a business owner, right? And they're kind of debating whether they should set up maybe a 401k or a pension for themselves. Like, how would you kind of steer that conversation if someone was just coming up to you and saying, hey, you know, I've got this business and I'm trying to, you know, maybe I'm making a lot of money in this business and I've never really taken the opportunity to pay myself. How would you kind of advise them and kind of steer them on that?
Yeah, you know, this is actually a great question. And it's more for business owners, but I think it's kind of relevant to the people that are participants too, meaning if you're an employee of a business.
Right.
So let me start with asking you some questions. Like, let's say you're the business owner, okay? And so you come in and you're asking.
Do I get to pretend to just, are you going to make up some numbers?
Yeah, why don't we just kind of go with it here and say, so if you're a business owner, I would say, okay, well, first and foremost, You know, are you primarily looking for a way to maximize how much of a benefit you can receive? Or is this about employees and you're trying to create a retention tool? What's sort of driving the reason behind your wanting this plan?
Let's go with I'm making a lot of money and I'm in a super high tax bracket.
Okay, so you're looking to try to figure out how to save some taxes.
Right, and I also want to help the employees out, but I'm really looking to make sure that I'm in a good spot first.
Okay, so now just for everybody listening, what Matt just kind of laid out for us is it's really useful to understand when you're a business operator, because selecting the plan, you know, there's different things, like there's different reasons you would choose different plans, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, and so by saying, hey, I'm in a high tax bracket, then that kind of cues us in, like first and foremost, hey, I'd like to, you know, maybe pay lower taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, keep in mind, everybody.
Do you want me to give you like a number? Will this help guide you?
Sure. I mean, okay. You can.
Say I'm making $400,000 a year.
Okay. So you're making $400,000. So that's your income. The business has other expenses, but net to you, about $400,000.
Yep.
So that puts you pretty high up there, approaching the 37% federal tax bracket.
Sure.
A little higher than $400,000 now.
Yeah.
But, you know, approaching, so that 35, 36%. Top end rate plus self-employed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be paying more in self-employment tax. And then in Oregon, you're going to throw the state tax on top of that. So another 9%. So all in, you're paying over 50% in taxes on these dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if we think about that as the frame up here, then keep in mind, everybody listening, when you're a business owner, businesses that have expenses, they get to deduct the expenses out of the revenue. And then what's left is the profit that's taxable, okay? The interesting thing about a retirement plan is for a company, right? And that's what the employer is. They represent a company. They get to deduct or expense out retirement plan contributions.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. And so that's why this is a pre-tax benefit in most cases. And I would say in most cases from the employer side. But Matt's interesting, right? Because Matt, you get to wear two hats.
Right.
Right. You're an employer, meaning you're the owner of the business, but you're working in the business too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Are you
kind of wearing both hats?
Well, do you have any employees? And you said yes, right? You said
two employees.
Okay. Two employees. Yeah. All right. So if you've got two employees and there's some things to, are they owners at all? Or are they just employees?
No, they're just employees. Okay. They're not making a ton.
Okay, so that's also an important detail to understand.
They're $20 an hour employees.
All right, so if you have two employees, understand that there are some rules of fairness, meaning you can't create a retirement plan that only benefits you as the employer and leaves your employees in the dust.
Right.
So we have some rules to follow. They're called ERISA rules, right? Employee Retirement Income Securities Act, but who cares? It basically says you got to be fair, so you're going to have to make contributions to their accounts as well as yours. But we know something, right? They are not considered highly compensated employees. That's a technical definition, okay? Nor are they an ownership class, another technical definition, which means that we're going to need to make sure that they participate at a reasonable level in this plan with Matt. Otherwise, Matt may not get to realize the full benefit of the retirement plan as
the
employer.
So their actions start to matter.
Yes. So we have to consider that, right? Now, how old are you, Matt?
I'm 62 years old.
Okay, how old are your employees?
They're in their 40s.
Okay, also relevant.
How so? Elaborate.
Well, let's talk about, first and foremost, how much money would you like to be able to put into retirement?
Now, that's a big one. Do you want to talk about why? Because this is a very, very interesting piece.
It actually is. All right. So I do want to talk about why. I love that you asked the question. As I look at the clock, I realize we're a little past the hour. If we take our break now, let's take the break. When we come back, let's ask that question. Like you said, hey, we're talking about how much money do you want to put away in your retirement? Right?
The ultimate question.
The ultimate question. So we'll get this answered. Right, if we come back, stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 99 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show, where today Matt and I are playing a little game here about how much money to put into a retirement plan and, why it's relevant to you. So we're doing some plan design questions. Matt has given us, you give us the scenario?
Yeah, it's
the
kind
scenario?
Of a hypothetical deal. Yeah. I'm a 60-year-old guy, and I've got a couple employees that are making about $20 an hour. They're in their 40s. And what I'm trying to do is figure out this issue that I've got because I'm making $400,000 a year. And I want to put some money in retirement, but I don't really know which way to go.
Right.
And so you, the financial advisor, are helping me down this path. And where we left off was you said to me, hey, Matt, I need to know how much you actually want to put in your retirement account.
Right.
And then I said, well, why, David? Why? Like, kind of guide me through the what if I put a lot versus what if I put a little, and
well,
how does that affect
me? You know,
me?
It's because there is a maximum contribution limit on one plan and not another.
Right. So you're telling me that if I want to put $250,000 of my $400,000 away in retirement versus I want to put $20,000 a year away, it's going to be a different plan.
There are different strategies, right? So
Can you play both situation A and B?
So let's kind of go with a really, when I say this, simple one. The first one would be looking at, let's say you didn't want to make contributions any higher than about, I'm looking at this, I'm saying you could do 19 and 35. Well, it's... The first one I would look at is what I would call a simple IRA.
Okay.
Low limits.
Okay.
The reason that you look at a simple IRA when you're not trying to put a ton of money away as an employer is because if you're a small business, you have fewer than 100 employees, you would likely qualify. And the simple IRA has what we call a prototype plan. You don't have to do any kind of special administration. The accounting is very straightforward.
So it's pretty easy to get up and going, but the amount you can put in is kind of limited.
It's kind of like an off-the-shelf plan. The IRS just says, if you follow these rules, they're just standard and everybody gets the same version of it, but it'll work for you. And so right now you can put the contribution limit for 2025 is $15,500, and then you can put another $3,500 if you're over the age of 50.
Okay.
So it's $19,000 max contribution.
So then let's play the next. We're going to add two more scenarios.
Now, hang on.
Oh.
It's not that low, right?
Mm.
That's the employee contribution. You're the employer, and so what you get is you have to also do a matching contribution, and there's two different versions between 2 and 3%. Let's just say the 3% matching contribution.
Okay.
And there's no vesting schedules or anything else, right? Once you give it to your employees, they get it. But what it will cost you is that whatever 3% of the payroll is going to go to your employees. That's the cost of the plan. They put money in, you match it up to 3%. Okay? It's a match. If they don't put anything in, you don't put anything in. But if they put 3% or more of their own income into a retirement plan, you're going to match at 3%, okay? Mm. But you can also match yourself. So you had $400,000 of income and a 3% match, right? So 3% of $400,000 is going to be $12,000, if I'm doing the math right, on top of your $19,000, right? So now employer and employee combined is going to be, what, $32,000? If I'm doing my math right.
Right. So,
so it's like, all right, well, I can get you to 32,000. Now, if you were to tell me not good enough, more.
Yeah.
Right. Then I would say, well, how generous do you want to be with your employees, Matt?
I'm okay being generous.
Okay. If you're okay being generous, the next level up would be a simplified employer pension or a SEP IRA.
Okay.
Here's the thing. The employees don't make contributions. Okay. It's just the employer. But you have a cap in a SEP IRA for 2025 of $66,000. It's just a percentage of pay. So if you were to look at that and say, okay, well, what's $66,000 is X percentage of $400,000.
Wait, hold on. Just for language clarification. So the first one we talked about was the simple plan.
Simple plan.
Now we're talking about the SEP.
Correct.
Okay.
Right? And so if I am doing some, let's see here. If I do 66,000 and we divide that by 400,000, that is as a percentage 16.5%.
And what was the max?
Well, that's the max you can put in, up to 25% of your income, which okay. would be a so it's a 25% of your income or $66,000, whichever is lower.
Mm.
So you made 400,000, 25% of that is 100,000.
Right. But so it defaults to the lower.
Yeah, which so 16.5% is going to be the lower threshold. But now you're going to have to put 16.5% of each of your employees' pay in as well.
Okay, but you know, if they're only making $20 an hour, maybe that's not too big of a hit to the business.
Maybe
and
not.
They get to feel pretty good about it.
Right.
Okay.
But if you were concerned that that's too much,
mm-hmm.
that you didn't want to make that big of a contribution in, because you know, if we just said $20 an hour times 2,000 hours a year, you're talking about $40,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if we're talking about times 0.165, I'm enjoying doing math at the same time here. $6,600 each mm-hmm. that you'd be contributing to your. I should have just known that, right? Because the ratio is like 400,000, and it's like, oh, we just did the ratio down here. So, anyway, you're like, well, I got to put $6,600 a piece in there. That's over 13 grand. What if I don't want to put that much in? So, well, then we could look at a 401k plan.
Mm.
Now, why didn't I lead with the 401k plan, Matt?
I actually don't know why you didn't start there, because it's what most people kind of default to and know.
Well, they know it, but also because the 401k escalates in complexity.
It does that, and also I believe the limits on that are kind of low if you're that $400,000.
So it's a total for 2025, not that bad actually. You're about $70,000.
Is it that high?
So it's actually
now?
Between employer and employee.
Yeah.
Okay. Your employee contributions are going to be capped different, but your total contribution between both employer and employee is going to be 70 grand.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little higher than a SEP, right?
Yeah.
And if you're making $400,000, you may not need to put in, you could do a 10% match.
Right.
And so I think I'm looking here. Let me pull up the total contribution. So 401k, the elective deferral as an employee is $23,500. And if you're over 50, another $7,500. So you put $31,000 in. That means that the business can match you 9 to 40 plus, so $39,000.
Hmm.
Right. That's going to be less than that 16.5% threshold.
Right.
So now the match goes down.
There you go.
Right. So you're actually able to match at a lower amount for your employees.
Hmm.
But there will be administrative expenses because a 401k plan actually has its own tax filing. And it has some testing to make sure that you're passing
with
the fairness doctrine.
With that complexity comes cost.
Yeah. It's no longer an off-the-shelf plan from the IRS.
Mm-hmm.
It's a customized plan, and customized plans require some bookkeeping and auditing.
Mm.
Right? It's called third-party administration. And so those costs come along with that plan. And the record-keeping to track all of the money comes with it, too. So there's accounting and record-keeping. So that does create some administrative costs for the plan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it gets you up to that 70,000 and potentially the combination of administration and your employer contributions is lower than if you just gave the employee contribution.
Right.
And so for all of you out there that are employers, you're like, yeah, the boss is screwing me over. It's like, well, maybe. Right. But I would say if you're still getting a, 10% match in your 401k, that's pretty solid.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So like before we, throw the boss under the bus here, I'd say let's, maybe that's not horrible. Now, if you're saying, well, I'm only paying them 40 grand, I'm like, well, it depends on what they're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
$40,000 for, night security might be okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway.
Do you have any more that you kind of want to touch on, or did that kind of cover your bases here?
There's kind of one more that's the least understood.
Which is?
It is the pension.
Ooh.
Right? So I can unpack this for us and
the
let's
mystery
do this.
Around
the
pension.
Mystery around the pension. If we do this now, if we take our last break, when we come back, I can explain like why is the defined benefit, like why is PERS and stuff, why is it so much more complicated? So we'll do that. When we come back, we'll explain that, and then we'll explain for Matt's employer situation, which one might make most sense.
Okay,
we'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Show.
Are these radio breaks keep getting shorter?
I think the Earth is spinning faster.
That might be it, too.
You know, it's a reasonable explanation. It's like the end of a toilet paper roll. It all just goes in a hurry.
Yeah, especially when you have a toddler and they like to spin it and you like turn around and you're like, oh, the whole roll is on the floor. You spun that thing out quick.
Yeah.
And it never goes back on right.
Don't teach them how if you put one end in the toilet and flush it, it will just keep pulling.
That's coming, isn't it?
So, you get a stiffer toilet paper roll, it'll just break that way.
Put that Roto-Rooter on speed dial.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. We have talked about now the various types of employer retirement plans. And if you're thinking to yourself, great, but I'm not an employer. It's like, yeah, but you're kind of in these if you're an employee. Like these are different types of plans that you get. And we've really highlighted the defined contribution types of plans, right? So again, 401k plans, what did we really talk about? Like why would the boss choose one way or the other? But what we know is the employee can put some money in, the employer can put some money in. We didn't really talk about things like custom plan design where you can have custom matching schedules and custom vesting schedules and custom profit sharing schedules and those sorts of things. And honestly, if you're an employer and you get down that path, I'd encourage you to speak to a pro about this stuff. And I would say find somebody that's kind of is familiar with this.
Right. Just because the complexities are so.
Yeah. The plan design requires some specialization, right? Mm-hmm. And so our firm has done a lot of this, but we also have a lot of other specialists that we turn to go even further into the weeds of this. Because there's a lot of legal documentation that you want to make sure of. Because remember, as an employer, you actually have a bit of a fiduciary role in the plan design. So this is not something that you should just kind of be frivolous about. You want to take that role seriously. Fiduciary is no joke. But Matt, mm-hmm. just really quickly, because I want to get to the employee version of this. The last one we talked about, the pension.
Right.
The reason I don't spend a lot of time on this typically is because it's kind of narrow bandwidth. They're not nearly as popular as they used to be, but you can put way more money into a pension in certain circumstances than you can into a traditional defined contribution.
Right.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's set up so that you can basically give those high earners a way to because look at all the other options. There's not a whole lot, like if you're actually making maybe say $5 million a year, if you can only put $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, $60,000 in there as a ratio, that's not that much. So they had to set up something.
And it's not just that. If you think about, if you're making a lot of money and you're going, well, how am I in my retirement? How am I going to replace an income of $1 million a year? I'm not going to do that with a $10,000 contribution. No. And so what they're saying is, well, you're right. So in order to have a benefit in retirement, that's a stated amount. Like, and PERS does this too, right? Everybody gets frustrated when you hear stories about like Mike Bellotti, his final 3 years when he was the head coach of the Oregon Ducks.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, my final 3 years of contract, I was making, $3.5 million a year or something. And my tier one PERS is now paying me 90% of that or something. So something's really high, right?
Right.
I mean, maybe these are fictional numbers, right? But the idea would be like, if you needed to get $1 million a year in retirement, $10,000 contributions isn't going to get you there unless you're like two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're 2 years old and you got 65 years to grow it, maybe. But if you're 60 years old and you've only got 5 years to retirement, you're going to have to pile money in order to have a big enough nest egg to produce the benefit that you're targeting.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you can put such orders of magnitude more money in. Now, there are lots of rules around it. We're not going to go into those today. But what I can tell you is, again, if you have a very high revenue business and you're getting killed on taxes, this is where financial pros can help you. So if you don't, I mean, if you got somebody you know, all right, give them a call. If you don't have that somebody, they call us at 541-375-0898. All right, good pitch. Now, the rest of you guys that are employees, okay, I want to talk about something that I don't think it's talked about very much, and that is, what is the order that I think most people ought to invest? And I have to be very careful, because when I say most people, this is not specific financial advice. This is a concept I want you to become familiar with. And I always say that because, right, financial advisors cannot give advice case by case on the radio. We're talking generic here. But generically speaking, the concept, what's the sequence that you should be putting money into retirement plans? Which one gets money first?
What do you mean gets the money first?
Okay, you have so much money that you're able to save toward retirement in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, your employer offers a plan, and then you can also get an IRA or a Roth IRA, mm-hmm. or you could just put money into a non-taxable account. Where does the money go?
Well, personally, I really like the Roth for an initial place to start, right? Because if you look at it, there are income limits to what instruments you can kind of pick, right?
Uh-huh.
And so typically in your early years of saving for retirement, you're in a pretty low tax bracket, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so using a traditional IRA to try and lower your taxes when you're already in a really low tax bracket tends to not make a ton of sense. And that's why I like the Roth bucket, because also you can eventually phase out where you're not eligible to contribute to a Roth IRA. So I think one of the first kind of pillars to building wealth, or one of the first starting points, is that Roth IRA.
Yeah. And I do love the Roth. I want to throw a curveball at you.
Sure.
Okay. So if you were just getting started, mm-hmm. and let's say you're not eligible for a company retirement plan, I think you're right. If you're at a low income bracket, Roth is probably the number one place to look to put retirement money.
Yeah.
Because you're in a low tax bracket now, it's going to grow tax-free. And if you do it right, it comes out tax-free.
Right.
So you're kind of one and done on the taxes. And that's one of the only environments that happens. What if you're eligible for an employer retirement plan? What's the next question you should ask me?
Yeah, the next question is, you know, are they matching anything that you're putting in? And if they are, why would you not want to go get that free money?
That is exactly what I was looking for. Yes. So talk about the free money for a second. What do you say?
Yeah, so if the employer says, hey, we're going to match the first 3% of your pay, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you put in 3%, they're going to turn around and dollar for dollar match that. Well, maybe you're putting in $150 a month, and that's 3% of whatever your pay is. Well, if your employer is also putting in $150 a month, now you're getting $300 a month going in, but you only had to forego $150 of it. That's a big deal.
It is. It's basically doubling your money for showing up.
And a lot of people don't do it. I've heard this, right? A lot of people don't. And so you sit there and you kind of scratch your head and you're like, huh?
Yeah. So what I tell folks is, step one, max out the employer match.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Step two may be to max out your Roth. Right. Depending on where your taxes are really going to land. If you're a very high earner early, well, it won't matter. You won't get a Roth, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then we have to look at what are your future tax obligations, and might it be worth it to defer into Roth or not? Because maybe you have a Roth 401k option as an example.
Right.
But you get the free money first, then you typically fill up the Roth bucket, and then if you max that out and you want to put more in, you can go back to the employer bucket and cap that too. If you fill both of them up, then either you're a prodigious saver, right? Or perhaps mm-hmm. your income is not needed to live. Maybe somebody else is supporting you. Maybe you're still living at home. And so all this money can go into retirement. Okay. Well, that's one of those where I would say, you can see me after class.
Right.
Right. Maybe you max out your traditional retirement options, but maybe you don't need to just have retirement options. Maybe it's time to look at other types of investments as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, that to me is a pretty good start for anybody out there listening to say, how would I evaluate this? Is there going to be free money? Then you should go grab that. And then after that, where's the best place tax-wise to put it? And the idea is, bully your tax rate around. Do I get a, if I'm in a low tax bracket today and I can get tax-free in the future, that's going to work out better in lots of ways.
Yeah.
Roth is super flexible. So anyway, this stuff all falls under the, sort of the umbrella of planning.
Right.
Right? And so when you think about, well, who needs a planner? And I have my investment guy or gal, right? Okay, but are you getting advice around the not just the investments, but what the investments are doing in the strategy? Like, what is your financial strategy? How are you mitigating taxes? How are you positioning yourself for the future?
Mm-hmm.
And that to me seems like an opportunity that's sometimes missed in general, because everybody out there calls themselves a planner. But like, just because they tell, well, planning is how much money should you put in your retirement plan?
Right.
Okay. It's pretty narrow bandwidth planning.
Mm-hmm.
Right? How much insurance should you buy? I'm an insurance planner. Okay. Or maybe what you have is a salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I would just encourage you to try to look at the big picture on this. How does it all fit into the strategy? And the taxes matter.
Yeah.
All right. I'm blown away at how fast today has gone by. In the remaining 35 seconds or so, I guess, what do people do if they want to reach us?
Yeah, I think one of the easiest ways, instead of even having to pick up the phone, just go to the website at littlejohnfs.com. You can chat us on there, or you can even text the phone number that we've got at 541-375-0898, or give us a call.
Yeah, give us a call. It costs nothing to get a consult, and so you know we're happy to give additional opinions, that kind of stuff. So don't be shy about that. But as always, you know, if you're not going to work with us, find somebody you like and trust and reach out to them. But we're out of time for today, so we better run. Until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You've been listening to True Wealth. Thanks for tuning in on News Radio 1240 AM and 92.9 FM. Said that wrong, but whatever.